Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So the Lakers playoff run is over and now the long off season awaits. But that doesn't mean that your NBA playoff fun has to end, thanks to the Autograph app. On the Autograph app, all of your favorite sports content, sports articles, videos, podcasts, including yours truly, can be found in one place. And the more you read, listen, like, comment, and engage with this content, like you normally do, the more fans coins you'll earn, which you can then parlay into some pretty sweet sports prizes like $24 playoff tickets or $2 signed jerseys. Also, throughout the NBA playoffs, Autograph will continue to drop awesome rewards for fans, including 25% off Lakers merchandise. So all you need to do is download the Autograph app, check the description box of this episode, click the link, use the code LITLEGACY, sign up, create an account, and start fandoming away. Make sure to check the rewards tab to see all of the cool rewards Autograph will continue to drop throughout the NBA playoffs this year. Get rewarded for your fandom today on Autograph. All right, welcome everybody to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where first apron, second apron, blue apron, whatever godforsaken apron you want to wear. On today's episode, we are putting salary cap guru Yazi Goslin into the new CBA kitchen and letting him cook. Because this new CBA, it's like the Hell's Kitchen of CBAs in the NBA, especially if you're an NBA team still fixated on the three-star build. But yes, there's lots to get into, so let's jump right into it. I'm your host, Jonathan Hernandez, and I'm joined by longtime friend of the podcast, salary cap guru, and first-time dad, Mr. Yazi Goslin. Yazi, lots of changes in the last year, not only to the CBA, but also in your personal life as well. How have you been doing? And congrats on the big news and having your first son.
Well, it's been great. Thank you. And thanks for having me back. And it's good to be back. Been taking time off. And now I'm glad I've launched my YouTube channel where I'm talking about the cap more. And it's been awesome.
Yeah. Why don't you plug your YouTube channel? I see that you've been pumping out a lot of stuff for all the individual teams in the NBA as well.
So if you're not familiar with my work, I used to write for Hoops Hype and mainly just writing about, the whole salary cap aspect, team's outlook, what they could do next. So definitely more active this time of year. And now I've made that more or less into a video format. So you could follow, you can subscribe. It's Yazi Goslin NBA. That's the tag, I guess, the channel name. And look out. I'll be a lot more active as we get closer to free agency.
Yeah, your videos have been a key resource in my studying up for today's episode. So why don't we get into it? For today's episode, which I may break up into two parts, we are going to talk a lot about the new CBA, a lot of salary cap minutiae, and how it intersects with the Lakers books. After that, we shall then dive into maybe some specific names in the trade market. And then part two, it might still be in this episode or I might split it up. Part two, we'll talk about free agency, what the market looks like and who the Lakers can go after. But first, let's jump right into some of the new CBA logistics. I have a couple of questions for you, Yazi, that I wanted to quickly run by you. First up, with regards to salary matching, correct me if I'm wrong, but as a first apron team this past season, teams can still make trades within 110% of each other and send out a tad bit less money all the way up until the last day of the 2023-24 regular season, which is, I think, June 30th. So let's say the Lakers wanted to make a trade. Could they send out a little bit more money as long as it's within that 110% salary cap matching requirement? Because I know when we flip over to the new calendar year of 2024-25, I believe if you're over the first apron, you have to match salary 100% of each other, right? So if you could clarify that for me, that'd be great.
So even though the 24-25 season hasn't begun yet, the 110% is already dead. It ended basically after the trade deadline. So now, between now, like I said, going, if you make a trade now and you want to take in more salary than you're sending out, then you are going to get hard capped to the first apron, which is projected at $178.7 million. So you'll get hard capped for next year as well. So if the Lakers they just take in more salary in the trade now, then they're not going to be able to exceed next year's apron, even though we're not in that salary cap year yet. So that's the thing that they did. They don't want to put teams in a situation where they do a trade that theoretically would make them go past the hard cap in the following year, if that makes sense. They want to close that loophole of you being in a position where you enter the year over the hard cap if you should already be hard capped.
Gotcha. So technically, the Lakers can make a trade where they send out more money. It's just when we flip over to the new calendar year, they'll just have to rework their books so that they stay under the first apron somehow, right?
Actually, no. So now with this new CBA, they're actually, for the first time, really factoring in where you are in relation to the cap and tax and apron and all that the following season. They've never done that. So because of what I explained, that if you do a trade between now and the end of June, that could impact your apron standing the following year, you cannot, the Lakers in this particular case are already projected to be above the first apron. They can't do a trade right now that would technically hard cap them to the first apron of next season.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, so I had that incorrect. I thought that up until this point, yeah, that they could still maybe do a trade like within 110% and then just get their books in order once the new season starts. So even if D'Angelo Russell, say right now, like what if D'Angelo Russell is off their books though? Do they have to wait till that's actually finalized and he opts out and they renounce his... Damn.
As long as they clear the money, whether they do it in a trade or someone opts out, they just need the projection. They just need to be below it for next year's projection.
So it's almost like they have to do things preemptively before. Exactly. Okay. So, okay, I guess this is I forgot to ask you like a macro question and we kind of just dove head first into it. But like, what are your thoughts in general of the new CBA? How do you feel like it's going to affect teams this summer? Do you think fans fully grasp what's about to happen? Does it mean that there are going to be more trades with regards to teams just clearing salary? It seems like there's going to have to be a lot of jigsawing going around for a lot of teams.
Yeah, it's still too early to tell. I really don't know what to expect until we see it. The biggest thing, though, about this upcoming season is, if you see players getting squeezed for minimums, players like last year was Dennis Smith, Lonnie Walker, for example, should have gotten way more money than they did. That might happen again, not because of the new CBA necessarily, but because the salary cap is not going up very much at all. And that's leading to more teams being close to the tax or apron, and they're trying to avoid it. And so now they're have less spending power. So some players could get squeezed because of that. But the salary cap is going to increase every year for the next, by 10%, most likely for the next like 5-6 years at least. So with that being factored in, it might not seem like a lot because there's a cap, but keep in mind that that's compounding. The amount keeps increasing by 10% by the previous amount. So once that happens, maybe we'll see like a very healthy cap environment despite all these restrictions, where players are making, where maybe it's not like, maybe there is like a still a pretty healthy middle class where of players making in somewhere between like, you know, the $6 to $20 million range, so to speak.
Gotcha. Okay. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see, but it should be, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of machinations going on. And as I mentioned, jigsawing. So just to clarify and summarize my first question to Yazi, the Lakers right now, and pretty much till we see what they do in free agency, have, if they make any trade, they have to match salary 100% and cannot take back more money than they send out. They can reduce their salary if they want to, but they can't take back money.
This could be a bridge to the next thing, but even if they have the option to, let's say Russell opts out, I think they should do 100% matching. I think when you have Davis and LeBron, you need to exceed that first apron as have the strongest roster possible.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. One of my other questions, jumping right back into the salary cap minutia, is with the draft coming up, I wanted to ask you, when can teams factor in a draft pick's salary into trades? Before the trade or before the draft, if you trade a draft pick, that pick salary doesn't count in any trade salary matching purposes or scenarios. After the pick is selected, though, can you then use their projected salary in a trade to aggregate, or no?
In 30 days after the signing. So you can start signing your first round picks starting July 1st. So if you sign your guy July 1st, then you could use them for salary matching starting August 1st.
So have there been scenarios in the past where the Lakers could technically consummate a trade, a draft day trade with a team, and on that day, it doesn't seem like the salaries match up yet, but in print, they're agreeing to it in principle, right? So they trade that pick and then they sign that draft pick, and then the deal is actually completed 30 days later just so that they can use that draft pick salary in the overall deal so that it's 100% matching.
If that happens, I highly doubt we'll hear an announcement being like, oh, they agreed to this trade. By the way, it's going to happen. It's going to be official in a month. Because the closest we ever got to that was the Kevin Love to Cleveland trade. Because there was a lot of rumors at the time that, Kevin Love's going to come to Cleveland, but they got to wait till Wiggins gets his 30 days up so they could include him in the salary matching. So they never, and it wasn't announced until like the exact 30 days passed. So I highly doubt we'll get any preemptive announcement, but maybe like the JJ Redick signing, we'll hear for a month like, oh yeah, this is happening. Just got to wait.
Yeah, that's funny that you bring up JJ Redick. He's apparently our head coach right now, or he's already our head coach, but we can't say it apparently until after the NBA Finals. But yeah, so again, just to clarify and summarize that second question, the answer to that second question, if the Lakers make a trade with their number 17th pick, they'll technically have to match salary with other players, have to match 100% salary using their other players currently on their books, and they won't be able to use that draft pick salary yet. Next question. I wanted to get clarity on the new CBA rule regarding aggregating veteran minimum contracts. Can you clarify that rule? Because apparently you can no longer aggregate veteran minimum contracts into a larger deal during the offseason. I believe you can do it from December 15th till the trade deadline. But other than that, you cannot aggregate more than one veteran minimum into a larger deal unless that deal only involves veteran minimums, in which case you can include a max of two, right?
So this was something that I was really confused on, and I really didn't get the clarity until we saw the rule really take effect, or like something happened under the rule, which On trade deadline day, the Suns traded 4 minimum players to match for Royce O'Neal. And then I learned, oh, okay, so you, during in the 2 months leading up to the trade deadline, you could combine a million veteran minimum players if you want for one guy. I think as far as the rest of the year, my interpretation of the rule is it just depends on how many players you have coming back. So if you're doing like a 3-for-2, then I think a maximum of 1 minimum player can be used in a combination with those other 2 players. And then if it's like a 4-for-3, then if it's basically like if you're taking in like 1 less player, that's kind of how it works. I think it's a little confusing, but I think that's how it works.
Gotcha. So if the Lakers send out, like, let's say they're getting 1 player and they have to send out 3 players, they can only put in 1 veteran minimum contract, right?
I think so. I'm still not like, that's something that I'm still not 100% like truly memorized by heart, but just you could basically is, you know, safe to say that, yeah, you can only include 1 in aggregation. Just do 1.
Yeah, just do 1. And obviously that you bring up the Suns case because they wanted to get that over with when they could, in the timeline that they could. They've traded 4 minimums because presumably they can't do it this offseason. Okay, so let's move on to some of the Lakers-related stuff. Sorry, that was a lot of kind of in-the-weeds salary cap minutia stuff that I guess we're all just trying to figure out altogether. But with regards to the Lakers, when talking about the 3-star build route and its difficulties in the new CBA, yeah, in your opinion, are the days of the 3 max build dead unless one of your max players is one of the early tiered max players at the start of their career, or if you have a max level player still on their rookie deal? But outside of those caveats, it seems like it's going to be really hard to have 3 players on your roster in the new CBA who are all making $40+ million.
Yeah, I think the way you just described it is a really big difference. You can't just say max player anymore, especially as the salary cap continues to rise. There's vast differences of max level money. It starts this year's lowest max starts at $35 million, and then the highest is $50 million. Well, that's a pretty big difference. That's a $15 million difference when describing what a max player is. So when you look at what the Suns are doing, they have 3 players earning the highest amount possible, $50 million each. Yeah, that's pretty unsustainable. I feel like they're only going to have this year left, and then they're going to have to, and then things are probably going to change. But when you look at a team like the Thunder, for example, they're in a little outlierish situation where they drafted 3 players that one's already a max player, and then the other 2 looking like they will be. So then you have 1 guy making the 35% max once Shea, because he got this qualified for Supermax now. And then they'll have 2 guys with the 25% max. I've looked ahead, and they can sustain that, potentially bring another max-ish player, and still have like a pretty high level of depth with Dort, Isaiah Joe. So yeah, it just depends on what kind of max we're talking about. But also, how you got those players, if you drafted them, if you before started paying them managed to accumulate the depth, all those factors matter in determining if it's a sustainable situation. How long? I don't know, but I think like the Thunder's case, maybe through the end of the decade, I wouldn't be surprised.
Now for the Lakers case, and you outlined this in your video outlining the Lakers offseason, what are your thoughts on them pursuing a 3rd star? Right now, the names would be the obvious names: Trae Young, Donovan Mitchell. The most prohibitive one would probably be Zach LaVine. But would you advise them to even, I don't know, entertain that route because of how, yeah, prohibitive it's going to be on their books? And for example, let's say they trade for Donovan Mitchell, 100% matching, whatever. If they have Donovan Mitchell on their team, do they even have access to the non-taxpayer Emily? Or would they be so close to the second apron that, well, I guess non-taxpayer Emily has nothing to do with the second apron, but I guess would they even have access to the non-taxpayer Emily at that point if they trade for Donovan Mitchell and, let's say, want to re-sign Max Christie? Yeah, your thoughts on the third star build for the Lakers, and I guess use Donovan Mitchell as an example.
So, if you guys haven't watched my video after listening to this, watch it. It's everything you need to know about how the Lakers could trade for a third star and what it means for the rest of the roster. So, big spoiler alert, without even saying it, I basically show why Trae Young should not be an option. Because he makes so much money, it's going to cost so many players to salary match him, and then you're going to be left with just minimum signings the rest of the way. Maybe you can use the $5 million at tax pyramid level. Same applies for Zach LaVine, who I didn't mention, but he makes the same amount as Trae Young. And then Donovan Mitchell, it's a little easier because he's got that 30% max. No, 25% max. So I laid out a scenario where they could take in more money than they're taking less money than they're sending out. I did a scenario where they're taking in more money than they're sending out. Mm-hmm. And so that would hard cap them to the first apron, and they could still feel the pretty decent roster, but I would still support them doing the 100% match, especially since LeBron's probably going to resign for the max. And so, like, how do you keep your high level of debt? Can you, like, unless you, the deal is like at the Russell, Vincent, you're just sending out like this pure salary matching and then the picks, then it definitely makes more sense for the Lakers, but obviously the Cavs wouldn't do that. Either way, I just don't think the Lakers have quite enough for Mitchell or mm-hmm. Trae Young. As far, even if they can get Donovan Mitchell, who I think would help them a lot, I'm not sure I still like it given how weak the rest of the roster would probably be mm-hmm. in the end.
It would pretty much be vet minimums, right? So would they have the non-taxpayer MLE available, or would it be more the taxpayer MLE?
So if they do 100% match, then it's taxpayer because they could go over the first apron. But like, what are you getting?
Is that the $13 million or $5 million one?
Taxpayer, five, yeah. So you're not really, you're not getting a real difference maker there.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so yeah, so definitely watch Yazi's video on that. Let's say the Lakers, this is a more of a logistical question for the Lakers. Let's say they're below the first apron and they renounce D'Angelo Russell, or he just walks and he's off their books. With regards to using the non-taxpayer MLE, like, let's say a team is, after all their signings or whatever, let's say if they're $7 million below the first apron of 179, can you still technically use the non-taxpayer MLE, but only use 7 million of it as long as you stay below the first apron?
Yeah, and as long as you can field a 14-man roster, yeah.
Okay, that's a good little tidbit to know. Now, I guess this is a perfect segue into, what do you think happens with D'Angelo Russell? First, what do you think actually happens with regards to his market and what compromise him and the Lakers may make or not make, and then what would you personally do?
So most likely I think he opts out and just gets like a slightly higher deal annually and for more years with the Lakers. They can't afford to lose him. I don't really think he has much of a market this summer, but just the fact that the Lakers aren't probably gonna have a very hard time replacing him unless they make a big trade, I think that's a lot of internal leverage he has on them. So he'll probably get a, pretty nice, decent contract from them. And that'd still be like a great player to have at that rate. Now, I might make a video on this, just like kind of what I would do if I'm the Lakers. But if the Lakers do any type of trade, they always seem obsessed with upgrading a point guard. I would definitely be interested in a DeJounte Murray type trade, and I'd probably even be willing to trade to include Austin Reeves, because I'm sure the Hawks might want that, especially because the Pelicans are interested in him, and right as of right now I think they have a stronger offer with more picks. Mm-hmm. So what if you can do something where you get DeJounte Murray, so who's making he's on a really great contract. I think he's gonna make like around $30 million a year. which is pretty cheap. And then you can keep a little more depth, and you can use those other players, those other salary slots, to get a different type of shooting guard. So, that's something I would probably try to consider more. Just try to get more, players that fit the salary structure a little better. But what that would do as far as D'Angelo Russell, let's say they do make that type of trade, now you kind of regain the leverage on him, because if there's no market for him, then he will have to opt in. And now you got this beautiful $19 million salary to trade for another guard or a wing. So, just like very 4D chess I'm looking at in that situation. Sure. I doubt it's actually even being, that's actually what's going on. But in case they really are desperate to upgrade that point guard again, that's probably the route I would take.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they purposefully did this last year, but when they first signed Gabe Vincent to the non-taxpayer Emily before they were able to re-sign D'Angelo Russell, I'm sure they used Gabe Vincent as leverage, right? Like, oh, we already got our point guard, so just come back for $17.5 million this year.
I think that was more like him or Schroeder, and they just chose Vincent.
That's probably more the reality of it, but the skeptic in me is like, oh, they probably use Gabe Vincent as leverage. So in your scenario where the Lakers trade for DeJounte Murray, that would be Austin Reeves and salary ballast, right? So Austin Reeves and probably Gabe Vincent and two picks, you'd say, or like a pick, 2029 first or something like that?
Yeah, that's what I would definitely try to make it and try to 100% match it to exceed the first apron. Just have as much spending power as possible. Hopefully you can keep two of your first. I don't know if that'll work, but if including Reeves means you get to keep the majority of your first, then now you have some ammo left to get your Reeves replacement or just another wing in general.
Right. Now, do you envision a scenario where, let's say, D'Angelo Russell doesn't have a market, the Lakers have leverage on him, and he's looking at opting in to his $18 million year left expiring contract, or, I don't know, taking the non-taxpayer MLE? Do you see a scenario where he just takes the non-taxpayer MLE for more years and gets, over 2 years, he'd get like $26 million? Or do you think he'd just opt in at that point, knowing that he's going to get traded?
I think he would like almost 100% opt in at that point.
Gotcha. Because he can, even if he gets traded, he can just recoup his value and get a larger contract the next year. Is that what?
Yeah, you gotta keep those weird rights, especially if he has another good year like he did last year.
That is a good point. Yes, the players do value their bird rights. So let's say if the Lakers re-signed D'Angelo Russell, what do you think is the most the Lakers can offer him in year one on a new contract that also leaves them enough space below the second apron to, say, re-sign Max Christie and be able to use the taxpayer MLE?
Well, it won't leave them with much, because I'm looking at their sheet now. I'm guessing LeBron does his opt-out and re-sign, which actually saves him a little bit of money if he does that versus the player option. But either way, whatever their payroll looks at is looking like now, and you guys can also check my website, capsheets.com, to see where the Lakers stand exactly now. They're roughly $6.2 million below the second apron with 13 players. And I think even with the LeBron and Russell situation, let's say they're both opt out and re-sign a new contract, I still think that second apron space they're looking at is going to be roughly the same after all that. So that actually doesn't leave you much for Max Christie. I don't know what his market is. And I was listening to Dunked On, and they were talking about, what if one team gives Max Christie the Paul Reed deal, where they give him the room at level, that type of amount, first year guaranteed, and then the last two non-guaranteed, just to give him enough money to steal him away, but also not commit to him, to see what he's made of. So I don't know what his market is, but I, assuming that type of offer is not available, I would guess that they should have enough to re-sign him. under the second apron.
What would you think a starting salary, new salary for D'Lo would be to make that happen? Let's say Max Christie gets $6 million. Split the difference between 5 and 7, he gets $6 million. I mean, I kind of did the rough numbers, and it's kind of looking like, at most, the Lakers can probably sign D'Lo to a like $20 million contract if they give him a raise at all on the on a new deal. What do you think? And I think at the end, as you mentioned, the Lakers are going to be so close to that second apron that I believe if D'Angelo Russell returns, if they want to re-sign Max Christie to around $5 to $6 million, I don't think they can re-sign Torian Prince, obviously. And then I don't know if they have enough to use the taxpayer MLE of $5 million.
Yes, exactly. All those points are right. So it's like one of those three they get to choose from. So if they're mostly running it back, obviously they can do some, they can save some money, try to see maybe they can trade Gabe Vincent or Pochettino or something just to save a little bit of money. But as far as with what Russell, I think you made a pretty good, have a pretty good idea of the numbers. Like you can start him at a contract that starts at like $21 million, and then over the 3 years, it'd be like around 63 for 65, which is, I think, a pretty solid valuation for him. So LeBron would be like 49, Davis 43, and then Russell 21. Yeah, you could still fit Christie at around $5-6 million.
Okay. So if you have D'Lo and Max Christie, say goodbye to Torian Prince and the taxpayer Emily. Okay.
Exactly.
So that's Yazzie nodding on the video. Okay. So if I were Rob Pelinka, I don't know how negotiations go. I would give D'Angelo Russell a raise of $500K and say your first year starting salary is $19 million. It's like you're opting in, and then your second year raises to like 21. Do you think that would work out just so that he actually helps them with their salary cap maneuvering to stay under the second apron?
Yeah, if he has absolutely no market, then yeah, I don't see, that should be enough of a raise.
Okay. Yeah. Hopefully he only gets a small raise if he gets a raise at all. Last question on this topic. If D'Angelo Russell opts in, does he have an implicit no trade clause, or would he just waive that, or has he already waived that?
That only applied for the first year of the 2 year deal.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So once he opts in, they can trade him immediately.
Yep. Because the only thing he was signing off on is if he was traded last season, then he loses his bird rights if he were topped out. But now that he's opting in, that's irrelevant.
Okay, there you go. Once D'Angelo Russell opts in, if he opts in, the Lakers can trade him immediately. All right, why don't we take it to break? When we return, let's get into some trade talk and see if Yazzie has any trade ideas for the Lakers besides the one he proposed of DeJounte Murray. So yeah, we'll pitch it to our sponsors and then catch you guys after the turn.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Create the deck of your dreams now at Menards. Spend less time maintaining your deck and more time enjoying it. with UltraDeck Low Maintenance Composite Decking from Menards. It's easy to install and built to last. Plus, get free estimates fast with our deck design program in-store and on Menards.com. Save big on UltraDeck. And check out more great deals happening now at Menards. Save big money at
Menards. All right, so we are back. Yazi, with regards to trades and the timing of a deal with the NBA draft coming up. So the Lakers have three picks that they can trade. The 2024 first on draft night, 2029 and 2031 after the Pelicans officially deferred their pick that the Lakers owe them to 2025. How would you do things if you were the Lakers with regards to, I don't know if they're going to use all three picks this summer. I doubt it. But is there something to the Lakers breaking up their asset movements and their trades? Like, for example, do you think they should make one marginal trade before or on draft night to take advantage of their number 17 pick's value of not having been selected yet? And then after that, they do another deal using 2029 and 2031 during free agency. Or do you think they should try and combine all of their assets into one deal for like a bigger swing? And yeah, and I don't even know if that's possible on draft night or near draft night. But yeah, I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but like, what are your thoughts on them? Do you think that they should sort of break things up a little bit or try and go for the home run swing and use all of them together?
I completely understand what you're saying. And out of those options, if I'm required to do one or the other, I would do the first option. Try to trade one pick at a time for marginal upgrades. Like, the Lakers need more wing players. Like, it's just after LeBron and just Rui, really. Reeves is, I wouldn't consider him like, you know, like the size and physicality that those 2020 Lakers wings have. If they can get like one more of those guys, that would go a long way, I think. And I think that if you look, the Lakers could very well, I feel like the Lakers might be motivated to do what you're proposing after seeing what the Mavs just accomplished. Mm-hmm. Where, first of all, they let Brunson go when they could have had him making like pennies. And that they would have been in a whole different situation right now, because then they'd have a lot more flexibility. They could have had even better option, but instead they had to, like, just in the most backwards way, fix that mistake by trading a first round pick and losing Dorian Finney-Smith to get Kyrie. And then they traded another first to get PJ Washington. And then they traded a swap to get Gafford. So they just slowly did like what you said, like slowly trade away a first to get, bring in another piece, another asset. They bring in another piece, a future swap to bring in Grant Williams, who they later parlayed into PJ Washington. I could see the Lakers looking what the Mavs just did and be like, why can't that be us? And try to go all in, but slowly.
Yeah, like do a piecemeal sort of job. And it's kind of what they did last year when they traded Russell Westbrook with the 2027 first and got back ancillary pieces. Now, a lot of Lakers fans were assuming that at some point within this calendar year that they would use another pick to then upgrade once more, but they stood pat at the trade deadline. And I give a lot of credit to you, Yazi, with regards to foreseeing this, because last summer you were like, the Lakers should pick up Malik Beasley's option and pick up Mo Bamba's $10 million so that they have expirings to use at the trade deadline. And when it came time to actually make a deal, Yazi, the Lakers did not have any expiring contracts to trade. And I think that's why I don't give them grace for not picking up those options in the summer, but I give them grace for they were pinched at the trade deadline. They'd had no contracts to use. The only expiring contract was Torian Prince, who only makes $4.5 million, you know? So yeah, I think they're going to have to try and piecemeal this. And the good thing is, I think whatever big trade they want to concoct anyways can be done without the number 17 pick of this year's draft, because everybody's trying to trade their draft picks away anyways. So everybody's more focused on 2029 and 2031. So if the Lakers can make a marginal move on draft day using some salary ballast that they already have, along with number 17, I think they should go ahead and do that. Do you have any Do you have any trade options for the Lakers in mind that could be centered around the draft? If not, I have some options that I want to throw your way to get your idea on them. But yeah, I'll leave it to you first if you have any options.
I haven't really thought too much about what that could be. I really like the DeJounte Murray scenario at the trade deadline, and now I'm skeptical they'll be able to get it done because he played so much better after that. His price has probably gone up. Mm-hmm. I get the feeling this team's going to be more or less the same until we get to the trade deadline.
Okay, so I have some trade hypotheticals that I want to throw your way. You let me know if they're crazy. You let me know if it's feasible. And these would be trades surrounding the Lakers' number 17th pick. Number one, the Lakers trade with the Portland Trailblazers. They use Gabe Vincent and JHS, so that is $14.8 million going out. The number 17th pick for Robert Williams, who's, I believe, making $13 million. And the Blazers' number 34 and 40th pick, because Robert Williams is supremely injury-prone. I'm sure the Lakers would want some compensation going back. So what are your thoughts on Gabe Vincent, JHS, number 17 for Robert Williams, 34 and 40? Are we giving up too much? Are we not giving up enough? What are your thoughts on that deal?
I think Portland probably says no because one, they then have three firsts in this draft, which they already have a huge roster crunch to take care of. So I don't think they'd be interested in that. Gabe Vincent is still bad money as of now. Mm-hmm. You brought up the fact that in hindsight, yeah, the Lakers should have kept Beasley and Bamba because they would have had more trade options. They basically cut those guys specifically to sign Torian Prince and Gabe Vincent. And now that Gabe Vincent contract is still hurting them now. That is the contract that you're putting in hypothetical trades, but it's not like teams aren't. It's not something you could just plug in as easily as those other contracts, like Beasley, Bomber, non-guaranteed, would have been way different.
All right, so that first one bombed. I'm going to try and get to a trade, Yazi, where you're like, okay, this might make sense. What about Rui Hachimura, JHS, and number 17 for the Brooklyn Nets' Cam Johnson? And we've already heard Joe Tsai kind of waffle a bit on the direction of the Brooklyn Nets, and maybe they're going to go for a rebuild. Cam Johnson is 28 years old. I believe he's owed like $22 million next year, and then actually $23 million next year. And then I believe he has another 20 plus something million dollars the year after that. But what are your thoughts on Rui, JHS, number 17 for Cam Johnson? He is kind of injury prone as well. I've heard Lakers fans say we're giving up too much, but what are your thoughts as an outsider?
I was really high on Cam Johnson as a Sun, and when he first got traded to the Nets, didn't quite kind of cool down last year, but I think he's still getting better. I think the Lakers are better off keeping Rui in this iteration of the trade. I do think they're giving up a little too much to trade, to go from Rui to Cam Johnson. Like, that might not help you that much. I don't know how much more of an upgrade he is, unless you really think Cam Johnson has a lot more. Like Rui, you can make the case that he's more or less going to be this guy going forward for the rest of his career. But Cam Johnson, yeah, he does have, I think he has a little more higher ceiling. So maybe he does develop into something much higher. But I also think the Nets, they've been pretty stubborn about trying to keep all their best players, not trading Bridges for a lot of stuff. They could have traded Dorian Finney-Smith for a lot of stuff. I get the feeling that they're just going to feel that just as strongly as for Cam Johnson right now. Just don't want to keep their good players, even though they stink.
Yeah, so I actually got a trade through that Yazi says the Lakers are giving up more. And I actually agree with you because Cam Johnson, I think, is a better fit next to LeBron James and Anthony Davis, like theoretically. But I don't know if he can stay healthy enough the way that Rui has been healthy and available. And then the Lakers are giving up the number 17th pick. And I believe they would actually also have, since they have to match 100% salary, it's like Rui, JHS, and then another like Christian Wood or something. So it's a lot of players going out. Probably doesn't make sense for either team.
I think you only do that if you think Cam Johnson has a ton of untapped potential.
Yeah, which, I mean, he could. I mean, I was in your same boat of like, man, this guy is 3 and D all the way, prototypical 3 and D, but I don't know, maybe some of the shine kind of got off of him when he moved over to Brooklyn and hasn't really been able to be the same dynamic player that he was on Phoenix and be as available as he was earlier on in his career. Okay, my last trade hypothetical for you. This is kind of like a lower end deal. What about Gabe Vincent, JHS, number 17 for Chris Boucher and number 19 from the Raptors? I feel like you're already going to say no because you're like, why would the Raptors want Gabe Vincent's contract?
So the Lakers are just doing this to get to
Chris Boucher,
get off that extra year of Gabe Vincent?
Yeah, and I guess if the Raptors want JHS behind Emmanuel quickly for some reason, I don't know if, see, the other thing is the problem with this is like the Lakers are trading their number 17th pick, but getting back the Raptors' number 19th pick. So I don't know if the Raptors would do all of that just to move two picks up, unless they really like Gabe Vincent. But,
so I think the Raptors say yes to that because I don't think they really need... I don't think they're going to have any cap flexibility next summer. I don't think there's supposed to be a cap space. I mean, maybe they can. I might be wrong. I'm probably wrong. Maybe they need that extra $11 million. But I guess it just depends on how they feel about Gabe Vincent and Huchefino. If they like them and they want to move up, then that's a small price to pay, especially because Chris Boucher is, I think he's
expiring.
He might not play this year. I think he tore
his MCL. Oh, because of his injury.
Yeah, I think he tore his MCL, so...
Oh, you were right. That is something... Okay, that is something I forgot about.
So it just depends, I think, on Raptors and how much they like those guys.
No, I'm taking that deal off the table now that you reminded me that Chris Boucher tore his MCL. My God, I thought he was just injured, but I forgot that it was like a severe knee injury. I don't know how severe. Okay, scratch that. My real last one is...
Maybe Kelly Olynyk or something?
Yeah, I would love to do Kelly Olynyk. Can you remind me, though, since he signed his extension in March, when can he be traded? Can he be traded as soon as July, or do they have to wait?
Yeah, he can already be traded because it was a small extension.
Okay, so I would do this deal for Kelly Olynyk. I'm not expecting the Raptors to give us back their number 19th pick in this scenario. Would you do that trade? Would you see that as fair for both sides, I guess?
It's definitely more fair. Okay. As far as the Lakers, yeah, I think If you think that Jalen Huchefino is like just not an NBA player, and you think you don't have any hope in him, then do that. You bring in Olynyk, he can be a really nice, he'd honestly be a really good addition for the Lakers. Wouldn't close every night, but he could definitely close. I think there are combinations where he could close on some nights. I think I like that one.
Yeah, I like that one for both teams potentially, and I am in the camp of having no hope on JHS, unfortunately. My last question to you in this segment is, do you have any players upcoming in this season who are on expiring deals or players set to become restricted free agents after next year who you think teams may want to get the jump on this summer by trading them away? Or maybe not even this summer, but the first half of next year. So a list that I have of guys like that include Alex Caruso expiring, Clint Capella expiring, Lauri Markkanen is a big one right now that the Utah Jazz are tossing around. We'll see if they get to an extension with him. And then there are like the younger guys who are set to become restricted free agents like Corey Kispert, Isaiah Jackson. Like, what are your thoughts on that group of guys? Do you think any of their teams will maybe want to get out ahead of things and trade them now? Or, yeah, your thoughts on those guys, and if you have any other potential, like, look out for this guy. Their team may have to make a decision on them soon, and maybe they're a trade candidate.
So Lauri Markkanen, no, because he's probably going to extend. He'll renegotiate and extend, most likely, with the Jazz. Who are some of those other names?
Alex Caruso, Clint Capella, Corey Kispert.
Clint Capella, I think that's like very textbook definition of what you just laid out, especially because they already have a Kongu and they're in a position where they could draft another center. And if they trade Trae Young, then you lose a lot of and Clint Capella loses a lot of his utility there. That's a really good one. I think Malcolm Brogdon with Portland, they're already... are over the tax and first apron. They need to save money. And I was pretty surprised that they didn't, probably because I doubt they were getting offers for Brogdon beyond like a couple seconds. because every team is more or less set at guard. So they might be looking at just trading him for spare parts just so they can save some money try to get some type of assets back.
What are your thoughts on the Indiana situation? Miles Turner is expiring. Do you think the Indiana Pacers just try and re-up him? I know they have to make decisions on giving Pascal Siakam the potential max and then what to do with Obi Toppin. But if they re-sign Miles Turner, what happens to Isaiah Jackson then, who becomes a restricted free agent the next year?
So I actually started looking into the Pacers because also there's Andrew Nembhard, and mm-hmm. There's reporting that he's going to get offered a max extension, which would average, it would be like 4 for almost 60. I'm sorry, 4 for 80, something like that. So if you're paying Halliburton and Siakam double maxes, and then you presumably want to bring back Turner at around what he's making, maybe a little more, and then you got Nesmith making pretty decent money, and then Nembhard, you kind of have room for one more guy like Obi Toppin, or maybe you can bring back two of McConnell, Jalen Smith, Isaiah Jackson for next season.
Do you think there's a chance they could trade Isaiah Jackson before he becomes a restricted free agent?
I think that just depends on what kind of extension he agrees to. If he's going to agree to one of those cheap type of team-friendly deals that a lot of role player players did last extension deadline, guy like Peyton Pritchard getting his deal, he was making like, I think he's making like what, $6 to $8 million a year. Zeke Nnaji making $8 million a year. A lot of guys agreeing to those type of deals. If he's going to agree to something like that, I think you just keep him if you're Indiana.
Okay.
If he's going to demand more, then don't extend him and see what you can get from later.
Gotcha. That makes sense. My last question with regards to this same topic is the Orlando Magic and Jonathan Isaac. He has a non-guaranteed contract coming up that the Magic will presumably just pick up. But then after that, he's an expiring contract next year. Depending on what they do with their books this year, presumably they're going to sign a max guy, maybe two. I mean, their books are going to be pretty expensive coming up. Do you think that they could potentially move on from Jonathan Isaac within the year at some point just to get out ahead of it? Or do you think that this is going to be their team, whatever they do in the offseason, and they'll just try and re-sign him using bird rights after this year?
So Orlando's very interesting because right now they have a lot of cap space. So they don't have a lot of money on their books, but that's going to change very quickly because they're probably going to extend Jalen Suggs and Franz Wagner to big deals. And then the year after that is Paolo. So right now, what do they need? They need more like shooting, spacing, whether that's at guard or at the wing. Once they fill those needs and the roster starts to get more expensive, then Isaac very much doesn't really fit the payroll structure, especially at what he's currently making. Mm-hmm. So he can get moved, but also it's very hard to gauge like what his value is. This guy is amazing on defense when he plays, but how often does he play? How long do you want to commit to him, knowing that he can easily just get us another season-ending injury? So I wouldn't rule out a return to the match. Just depends what the money is and how the rest of the league values him.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying the Magic could potentially trade him, but if you're the Lakers, do you want to trade for that same scenario of a guy who you trade for the rights to pay him like $20 million again, not knowing if you can rely on him for more than, I don't know, 18 minutes a night, right? So
yeah, I don't think anyone's given a serious premium value for Jonathan Isaac until he could prove for like a couple of years that he's passed all these injuries.
For sure. All right, so that'll do it for our trade section of this episode. Yazi, thank you for hopping on and just going through all the logistics with us. So this will do it for our part one episode with Yazi Gozlan. We're going to have him back for a part two where we'll talk about free agency. Sorry if that was kind of all over the place. I just had so many questions regarding this messy new CBA that I wanted to get off my chest. Hope they were answered in a succinct and clear manner. Even if they weren't, go check out Yazi's page for all of the clarity that you can want or need. Check out his cap sheets and check out his YouTube page as well. Yazi, what's your YouTube again?
Yossi Gozlan NBA.
There you go. Check out Yazzie's YouTube. And yeah, we'll be back for part two, where we cover the free agency landscape and how that pertains to what the Lakers want to do to rebuild their team in this offseason. So till next time, we will catch you later. Yazzie, thanks for hopping on. And yeah, catch us for part two.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.